Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and personal transformation. Well, as you can tell, I've gone live on Windbar and I'm broadcasting all over the place. I'm on Facebook, YouTube, Periscope. I guess I should look at the camera. I'm kind of all over the place. And I'm also, obviously, where I started this personal transformation, I'm on Blog Talk Radio. So please welcome tonight to personal transformation. Tonight we're talking about forgiveness. Well, let me be very clear before we jump to forgiveness. When I talk about forgiveness, obviously, first off the bat, everyone on a journey, and no one's experience would ever be the same. And I'm also here too tonight to also tell you that I'm not sure you should do anything in regard to whether you should forgive yourself or whether you should forgive your abusers, or what you should do. So I want to be very, very clear, but we're just going to explore the notion of forgiveness and where that takes us. Yes, you have your own experience, and that's very important. Your story is very important, but we are going to talk about that a little bit more in depth once we just talk about the concept of forgiveness and what it could mean. I encourage you to interact if you look on Facebook or on Twitter or rather on Periscope. On YouTube or whatever platform you're on, and we'll try to get to you best we can, whether we say it verbally or we get back to you in text via the platform that you might be on. Folks, also I need to point out as well, I am not a doctor or a physician or a psychotherapist or anything of the sort. I'm not even a peer counselor, although I do have 10 years experience in peer counseling. I am not a peer counselor by trade. I do it by volunteer, and I do that at the Gatehouse. If you follow me, you'll know what I do and how I came out to be what I'm doing here today now. But nevertheless, for new people that are following, I started the Gatehouse back 10 years ago. But anyway, to what I'm saying, I'm not here to tell you what you should do or anything of the sort. All I'm doing here is offering my own experiences from my abuse as a child, but also, I really want to focus, especially these years, about the healing journey. And folks, tonight, here's my co-host, Nicola, here with me tonight. If you know her on Twitter as Living With Abuse, and you want to say hi?
Yeah, I'm just going to put this on mute. Hang on.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry. Is it mute? I don't think it is.
But anyway, folks, I have Nicola here beside me tonight, and it's
not
darn
my phone, by the way. Okay.
So we're working?
No, I'm trying to put, yeah, it's all working.
Okay, we're all working. Okay, we're all working.
Put it on mute. How'd you put your phone on mute?
Anyway, I'll let Nicola introduce herself, and then we'll get back into what we're talking about. So, Nicola?
Hi, my name is Nicola, obviously. You just introduced me. I am a facilitator at the Gatehouse. I've been there for a number of years now, so doing the phase one, phase two, and partners program, and whatever else we do along the journey. So we're talking about forgiveness tonight, and whatever that means to you, it's not necessarily a rhyme or reason or any kind of guidelines. So it's just basically what that is for you and whatever comes up for you. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, and I may drop some tidbits on my own experiences, but again, I'll remind you, I'm not here to tell you what you should or you shouldn't do. Your experience is your experience. I'll relate some of my experience. Nicola may do the same thing, but overall, we're just here to guide you, well, kind of through our experience, well, the experience. Your choice of what you do and how you take care of yourself is your responsibility, as it was for us. And I encourage you to do the same if you're trying to figure things out. We're going to give you some. We're going to help show you some guidelines of what could help you figure out some things about yourself in regards to this horrible thing what we call forgiveness.
It's not horrible.
You know, I'm over exaggerating in regards to forgiveness, obviously, but nevertheless, I know in the beginning when I went to the house back years ago, the concept of forgiveness, I was just so full of anger and rage. I don't really want to get into that part of it right now. I just really want to get into the part of, well, what does forgiveness mean? What could that mean thinking about forgiveness? There's so many different angles you could go at. I mean, when I talked about anger just here briefly just a second ago, it can lead to many other things. But I think what I want to do is I want to kind of take you through the process as we do at the house. I'm going to be reading, well, actually both of us are going to be reading from a process that we follow. I was going to kind of do it on my own, but I think I'd rather not, because this is very well written out in accordance to, you know, to our experience, and that is we're survivors of childhood sexual abuse. So this is kind of written out for our experience and kind of laid out for our experience. So I may change it up a little bit throughout the process, but through the reading part, through the bulk of the information, before I get to the questions, there will be some questions we'll throw out there at you to ask yourself. And you may find it helpful, and it may stir some things up, which is a good thing in some ways, because in my thought process, or rather in the thought process of doing so, it gets you thinking about, well, why does this bother me? So if this is bothering me, so what does that mean now? So maybe while you're doing this, so you remember, is only a suggestion, we encourage journaling at the Gatehouse. And I would also encourage you, if you want to now, to maybe take some personal notes of yourself and what you be thinking and feeling. So when we go through this process, what we are, and I'm also going to remind you too, I should say, I point out to you as well, I'm going to try to do this all in about an hour to hour and a bit. I really don't want to go too long about this, because we can go all night about this as far as that's concerned, but we're not going to. We need
on
time.
That point, yeah. Should we move on?
Just one more sec. So on that point, we are going to move on, but also we need time when we go through this, is to sit back and to process it and think, well, how does this apply to me or not apply to me? So, like I say, keep an open mind and go from there. And maybe could you, I don't know, where's the chat with all the captions under where we're saying the because I just want to see the chat box. Remember we're talking about the chat box?
Yes, here.
Yeah, right on the side where we are, right here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's all I want to see. Okay, so see who's up
Thank
there.
Thank you, Aaron. That's lovely.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron, if you're listening. Thank you. Okay, so maybe, Nicole, I'll get you to start off, and then we'll work our way down.
Yes, so food for thought.
And food for thought.
Questions. The process of not forgiving might be tied in a subtle but profoundly deep way to the belief that if I forgive the person who harmed me, the memory of the pain experienced throughout all these years will disappear. And with the loss of memory, I might also feel that I am abandoning the child, and therefore there will be no one left to remember, to hold the hurt and pain, no one left to hold the rage and anger, shame, guilt. So who will carry the torch for the harmed child that was once me? If I forgive the person that harmed me, am I condoning the harm that was done to me? Who will be my advocate if I forgive the offender? The struggle with forgiving a person who has harmed me sexually may be directly tied to the feeling of shame, anger, and blame I had directed at myself for believing that it was my fault that this took place. Since our retributive culture in so many ways demonizes people who sexually offend, who do I go to tell my story if I feel it was my fault for this happening, even though it was not my fault? If I add to this that I was made to feel special while the abuse is happening, and that the person who harmed me was a family member, a person close to me, a family friend, a pastor, a teacher, a relative, coach. The list is endless. It goes on and on. Who then do I go to tell my story? Who or him? To some degree, society overall, with its focus on retribution, actually in part shuts me down, and I hold on to the pain. Over time, pain and shame becomes an element of my identity, and how do I ever shed parts of my identity? It is indeed a daunting task, actually a heroic task. And on that point, I prefer to call myself a victor and not a survivor, so I cross that bit out and put victor. Sorry, just mentioning that. Sorry, you have to use humour in this sometimes. If I focus on pain and fear, I become that pain and I become that fear. But eventually, I see that these internal fears and pain are shaped by myths. What the British prefer to call claptrap. One prevailing myth being that if I was used, I would abuse others, and I may be greatly impacted by this false belief to the point where I stay away from relating in meaningful ways, even to my own children, my own family, for fear that I might harm them as I was once harmed. My relationships become more and more difficult. Hanging onto the fear based on myths fuels further anger, deep shame, and deeper guilt. In truth, it is impossible to hold on to anger and fear without it not touching others with whom I'm in a relationship with. So this is all in the book. How do I form relationships with others if I am first and foremost guided internally by anger, fear, shame, and guilt? How do those states influence the relationships I have in my life? If I keep the story of my abuse secret, how does this affect my personal relationships? Do I keep other secrets from my family? Am I indirectly encouraging on a subconscious level my family to keep secrets from me? Am I creating shame and guilt based on relationships on a lower conscious level? Am I doing so because of my holding on rather than letting go of the pain that was taking place in my life? So to sum that up, a lot of what we're talking about, especially in that last paragraph, my view is pushing it down rather than allowing it to come out, and which when you allow it to come out, you allow healing to take place. Or in my experience, that's what I did. So anyway, would you like to continue?
Okay, so there are some of these questions and thoughts I've struggled with over the years as I explore my experience of being sexually abused as a child. What I'm learning as I embrace my story that is the first person to benefit of exploring forgiveness is me. And that benefit flows outward to others in my life. I do not excuse the excuse as I focus on forgiveness. I become forgiveness, and the outcomes of this is my beginning. My beginning of why this abuse took place. As I explore the process of forgiveness, there is available to me a new way of seeing and believing. I realize that I will always be a compassionate advocate for the child. I've come to believe and therefore see that it took all that's taken to place through an empathetic lens. I can only see more clearly. I am no longer blinded by the bound of hate, rage, shame, and as once was, I began to see what I focus on to become. When I spend my life focusing on pain and anger, I hold on to the events or the event or the events that I can place in my life in plain lower consciousness. I focus on my experiences doing this. I'm living my life in a state of lower consciousness, and I'm creating obstacles in my journey to reach out to be my authentic self. If I teach myself to forgive, what am I really saying? Is the pain going holding on to no longer controls me? When people hold on to that belief, I forgive them and for that, for what they have done, this causes debilitating side effects. Great irony and past or tragedies of this form of thought is that for the first person who gets harmed is in this process is you. This happens to individuals since they get their states, intention, pain, rage, saying the surfaces, if I pick up a hot burning coal now and I throw it at a person, I'm so angry, who gets burned first? Obviously the person picking up the hunk of coal, right? In addition, when individuals experience negative thoughts and emotions, this can lead to different types of physical illnesses, such as ulcers, for example, as a very apparent one. Stomach issues can lead to many different elements. When you're worried, as an example,
insomnia,
headaches, and never mind, it can lead to addictions. Like when I talk about health problems, everything like chronic health problems, like could end up with
fibromyalgia,
heart disease, cancer. The list goes on.
Absolutely.
From my own personal experience, whenever I thought I began to feel negative side effects as a direct result. And to me, when I say that statement, I'm talking about anger and even rage when it comes up when I say that sentence. For example, my fists would close up firmly and I felt my body becoming constricted. And those are the kind of thoughts I would carry with me, what I carried with me for many, many years. When I spend those life focusing on the goodness that's taken place in my life higher consciousness represents an autonomous realm, if you want to put it in that context, from where we receive a higher intuitions and inspirations. Abusive love will humanitarian action, artistic and scientific inspiration, philosophic and spiritual insight, and I have drift towards the purpose of meaningful life. The more I focus on developing my higher consciousness, the more this personality of the victim begins to be understood. And
can I just stop you there a minute? Can we explain what a subpersonality is?
Go ahead.
Because there may be some people out there that don't understand what a subpersonality is. So basically, explain it in layman's terms. So as personalities, we might sometimes act out of ourselves. So we take on personalities that aren't truly our own, if that makes sense. Like some people develop like 5 different personalities or more. And they might take on, the trauma might actually, what's the condition called?
Schizophrenia?
No, where they actually have several subpersonalities and call them their... I can't think of the word. But anyway, some people develop subpersonalities so much that the belief is that they have all these different personalities that connect to them and they call them different names. So the trauma can do that to some extremes. And that's how the human brain copes with the trauma. It has been severe at a very, very young age. So we can develop personalities apart from our normal personality. So if you find someone acting out, then it might be one of these subpersonalities coming up. And that's one of the coping mechanisms that come up, help us heal from the trauma or cope with it at that particular time, wherever you are on your journey. So does that explain it in simple terms, if that makes sense? But if you have any questions around that, please, if I haven't explained myself clearly, please ask. It's not a problem. I'm not explaining it in a different way. So I just wanted to go through that, because some people might not understand what a subpersonality is, right? So I just wanted to explain that.
Actually, I'm going to read a little bit more in depth into that. Sure. So the more I focus on developing my higher consciousness, the more my subpersonality, my victim, begins to be understood. And along with it, I gain insight to attending subpersonalities. The fearful one, as I just said, the sex addict, the alcoholic, the drug addict. Again, those are subpersonalities. The one who sabotages relationships, the workaholic, the fighter, the weak one. As we all know, the energy it takes to sustain only weakens me. But in full embracement from all the place, mindfulness, and the energy becomes full of transforming the trauma of the past into triumph into the present. So better understanding that can turn that scenario around of being a subpersonality. You know, we all have our own names, what we call ourselves. Well, I had my own names, but I won't get into that right now. But the one I carried for a long, long time, which I don't carry anymore, which aren't evil whatsoever. I'll continue on. We're now going to examine forgiveness from a metaphorical context. Let's imagine forgiveness as the ability to be able to finally breathe. After holding your breath for an extremely long time, the concept of being able to breathe comes from the fact that you are now capable of releasing all those negative, self-destructive thoughts and emotions, such as fear and anger, within you. Conversely, when we don't forgive, we are basically holding on to your breath for as long as we can. Some people may even say, that's bizarre, I'm breathing. Within that context of forgiveness, once again, metaphorically speaking, we keep holding on to it and holding on to it and holding on to it. When you want to be able to breathe, when you're able to breathe, you are able to, for example, it is extremely difficult to shake someone's hand if it is in a fist. In the context of forgiveness, the first person that benefits from this thought of relief is actually you. Can you take over?
So regards to breath, I just wanted to go over that a little bit clearly. So when we say holding on to breath, or you're not breathing, what we mean is, like when you're in a car accident, for instance, or you know, something frightening happens, you go, and you stop breathing. So that's when we say, when you consciously breathe, this is how things work through us easier. So when you're holding on to breath or you're breathing very shallow, we don't call that consciously breathing. So when you breathe deep or you're more mindful of your breath, that's when we breathe and we can process things a lot easier. So that's, I just wanted to clarify that before we go on. We're not holding in any more rage against the person. So I'm just reading more out of the book here. We're not holding in any more rage against the person who harmed us. We now also comprehend that we could have harmed and we have harmed people in our own lives. We then begin to contemplate what would we need to help us grow stronger. And that doesn't mean hurting people in that, like, messed up childhood sexual abuse way. What we mean is, because we are still healing maybe from the experience, then by, for example, if you have anger or rage in your system still, even if you're pushing that down, because that energy is there, people still feel it. We all feel each other. You just intuitively feel it sometimes, or you may not even realize you're intuitively feeling it. So that's what we mean by that. Forgiveness is related to having a sense of connection. It's about seeing that you are connected to everyone and everything around you. It's about being able to see that you are highly capable of living a life within an advanced level of consciousness. Living out forgiveness is in a way living in a conscious level of rage, anger, depression, and bitterness, which is not helping you as an individual. It's only hindering you in your life, and it's very true. Based on everything that you have learned, we can determine that there are various psychological, physical, and biological components that have an impact on us and who we are shaped to become. For example, some people have dark hair, light hair, people are short, tall, thin, they speak different dialects, etc. Haha, I'm English. We all have these factors which impact who we are, so I've put it into relation. And grow some humor on this, right? The person who has harmed us also has a similar story. We want to get past the ideology that only these evil people, that only these evil people actually harm others. The act in itself is evil, but the person isn't. Are there psychopaths? The answer is yes. Though the person is a whole human being, that person might be a loving father to other members of the family. That person might be a beautiful grandmother, but they also, at the same time, commit this despicable and painful behavior. Through a lens of empathy, perhaps we can gain great insight into this issue of sexual abuse in ways that can help each other and every one of us. When individuals, what they are really doing is releasing all of that pain, anger, rage, and shame that they have trapped within themselves. They no longer need to hold on to that suffering anymore. They are strong. They are free. So I just want to go over that last bit regarding the abuses, etc., where it says that the person might be a loving father, etc. So we know from the research that we've done through the gatehouse and outside of the gatehouse that, and we see this in society, that abusers can be the kindest people on earth. Like, seriously, they can, because they come with a mask, maybe, and maybe they don't. However, when in society we hear, oh, Mr. Nice Guy down the road sexually abused little boy, little girl, whoever, people don't want to believe that because they've come to know this person. They know him in the community and they're shocked because it's Mr. Nice Guy. So automatically the community sometimes supports the abuse because they don't want to believe it. Who wants to believe it? No one wants to believe it. And so society takes that on. And so sometimes what happens is you get more support for the abuser than you do the abused. And that's where the secondary trauma for the person that has had these nasty things done to them, that's where the secondary trauma can come in. And the second impact is sometimes worse than the first impact. Because not only are you starting to come out to share your story and you may be vocalizing that, however, now you've also got this secondary trauma to deal with, and now people aren't believing you either.
Like telling you somebody should forgive.
Exactly. So, and we see this a lot in families. I had it in my family where it was shock horror, and they had no idea how to deal with it. They didn't have the tools to deal with it, and I get that now. Whereas at the time, when I shared my story and it wasn't dealt with, I don't know if the correct is the right word, but it wasn't dealt with. The person that's vocalizing at the time, because that's what they need to do, they need to heal, they need to share their story, it can be taken on really quite severely. So not only have you made this huge decision, and it's taken a lot of courage and strength to share story, now you've also got to deal with the loss of parents, the loss of your extended family, the loss of brothers and sisters. And that's huge, let me tell you, from experience. It's huge. I mean, it took me way over a year just to be able to function after the loss of the connection with my parents. I mean, it just takes time, right? So, and then years down the line, I reconnected with them, and there was a lot of peace and forgiveness around that as part of the journey. But there's a lot of gifts in that, because I came probably one of the most independent people that I know, just simply because of that experience. So there are also gifts in that trauma, if that makes sense. And that's how I see it, because, you know, I developed such an independence that I literally stand on my own two legs. I don't have to depend on anyone. I might be with a partner, but I don't depend on my partner to live, to function, to financially be. I don't depend on, you know, because at the end of the day, I've been able to stand on my own two legs. And that's one of the gifts of, for me, being in space and being literally left on my own. I had to develop those tools to survive and fight and be where I am really today. So there are gifts in that, and that's how I choose to see it. And I've always been kind of that vibration anyway. I choose the positive out of the negative. And I guess that's where I grow. I attach myself to the bright spark and keep pulling until I get to the top. So, but that's my experience. Not everyone is the same. So it's just, I guess, the way I see it. So,
Thank you for your insight.
Thank you.
So you want to continue on, then we're going to dive right into the questions.
Oh, I thought we'd finished. Where are we?
Okay, so where are you? Okay, so you're down
here?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, there you are. Okay, my apologies. We are done. So we've kind of been dropping some seeds for thought, or food for thought, as Nicola has described in the beginning when we started this. Now I'm going to ask you some questions that you could ask yourself. And we'll add insight or our thoughts to these questions as we're going along. And but I encourage you, as I stated in the beginning, if you're listening or watching and listening and watching, to write these questions down, especially if you are struggling with forgiveness. After all, it is your journey, and you have the right to feel whatever you want to feel. So this may be helpful if I tell you these. I'm going to tell you these questions, and you can start out from there. So the very first question. Again, we're just exploring the thought of forgiveness. And again, I'm going to remind you again, I'm not telling you that you should forgive, whether it be your abusers or yourself, or I'm not telling you should forgive anybody. It's totally your story, your experience. So please keep that in mind. Well, here's some questions that you can explore along this journey as it unfolds. So here's one question. How do you not forgive? What behaviors do you engage to ensure that never forgive that person? So what I mean by that question is, I'll lead off with my own experience. So, well, I had my reasons for not, I won't get into my reasons, but I never forgave my abusers whatsoever. I don't see that I have to, or I should, but there's a part of that. Never mind what I just said a part of that statement, but in saying that, that held me back, is what I'm saying. It held me back. It made me angry, and sometimes it made me rage. By holding on to that I'm not going to forgive that person. I carried a seed in my heart or in my body for many years that seed was never to forgive. And the trouble with that seed that I'm talking about is that I didn't forgive myself either. So that's what the kind of good question was. That that's my example of I don't forgive. Now, I know what yours may be, but here's another question. Why am I devoting my entire life to holding on to the feelings of shame, guilt, rage, and other human being for the other human being instead of focusing on my own living and my own terms? Well, what I mean by that, if you didn't understand the way I've stated that, is that, I did devote my entire life to holding on to that seed I just described. But at the same time, all those years that I held on to that seed, I was quite comfortable being in my own shame, my own guilt, and rage. It was kind of all together as one. It wasn't just one particular thing. Yes, anger was there. The rage was there. I displayed it in my behaviors, whether it be towards others or in my addictions, was my way of displaying that question. When I say I won't or I can't forgive the person who harmed me, knowing that I may never see or encounter that person again in my life, how does that benefit me? What impact does it have on the person that I will never see that person again? Well, I know in my case, my very first, well, I have no idea whether I'll see that person again. And furthermore, I've never had any criminal charges laid against my abusers to begin with. Saying that, I've had more than just one. I've only been aware of one that's ever died. And as far as forgiving those people, again, it falls back to the first two questions that I've stated, or falls back to my sieve, where I hear that anger and rage. So therefore, I can't forgive. Well, yeah, I can't. And even I brought some forgiveness to myself. I can't forgive those people for what they've done to myself and probably others. So that fact will never change, other than the fact that I don't rage about it anymore. So that's changed about that as well. Move on to the next question.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you forgive yourself?
That's what I just said. I was kind of saying at the same time.
I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah. Yeah, when I talk about forgiveness, which don't want to go too far, but yes.
To them, I know.
Yeah, my forgiveness towards my perpetrator, yes, no, as very, very clear. To forgiveness towards myself is another story where I've taken it upon myself to best I can with forgiving myself. I mean, I don't carry that anger, that rage and anger towards myself as I did towards my offenders. It used to be the other way around, on both sides. And I don't carry it on either side now, because if I did, then I couldn't be where I am now. So, yes, to your question, I have forgiveness towards myself, at least better than what I did 20 years ago, 5 years ago, or even a year ago. It's a work in progress, I said. But at least I can say that, yes, I have a level of forgiveness towards myself.
Thank you.
Okay, so next question. What I am accomplishing by saying I cannot forgive, what is the benefit to me and everyone I've had a relationship with? And if I if I say I cannot forgive that person who's harmed me, so what does that accomplish really by holding on to that all those years? I mean, you have your own experience too, but I know my experience, the seed I talked about from the beginning, that seed was not very good for my health.
No, definitely not.
Mm.
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, right now, I have worked on forgiveness towards my sister, who doesn't want a relationship with me, even on a polite basis, if that makes sense. I mean, we're totally different people anyway, so we're never really going to be at a level where we really connect with each other. I'm very kind of in that spiritual thing, and she's totally not there. So we never really will see eye to eye, because we don't have enough commonality with each other. But I actually forgive her now for her disconnection. When we see each other, which the last time was when my father died, it was just politeness. I was very genuine with that. However, a lot of hers was just a facade. It was just a load of, just to shut for her parents, really. So for me, I've worked on that, and I did write her a letter, which she wouldn't read. My mother gave it to her, and she basically handed it back, or wouldn't even take it. So at least I can hold my head up high and say I've tried. And I did respect the dying wish of my father, and I respected my mother's wishes that we treated each other with respect. So I hold my head up high, and I can let it go, because at the end of the day, it's her stuff, it's not mine. So as far as I'm concerned, she can keep that energy, because I'm quite happy where I am. And at the end of the day, you know what, I hold peace, so I'm okay with it. So at the end of the day, I forgive her, because that's her stuff. And you know what, whatever was in the past to me is there. And yes, it's there to teach us whatever it was there to teach us. And you know what? I have my head up high, because at the end of the day, I did nothing wrong. What was done to me was done to me as a very young child. And at the time, I had to verbalize what happened to me to my parents in order for me to grow and heal. And at the end of the day, if she can't relate to that, then it's her stuff. She can keep it, because you know what? I did whatever I did with my parents, and I did the right thing. So my crap is hers. So she can get over it whenever she wants to. And that's it. End of story.
Thank you. Okay, so, you know, we talk about the benefit of the non-benefits of holding on to, you know, to forgiveness, not to forgive. So what is the benefit of teaching others that it is not appropriate to forgive? For example, I don't have a situation. I'm not in a family. I don't have to worry about that. I'm basically by myself. So I don't have to worry about other family members just plain other family members that to worry about, you know, how they might feel about what I'm feeling about my experience in forgiveness. But if that was the case and I was around my family, what I'm getting at, what would I be saying to them about how I forgive, how angry as I've been describing myself, as I've been the seed I've talked about from the beginning of these questions, that seed that I carried all those years. If I had been in communication with my family, how angry would I have been, and what would have I said to show that forgiveness is, well, non-existent in many forms. So being a bitter person I was, where does forgiveness even come in? Probably never know what I was feeling, but using forgiveness towards other people for other things, insignificant things, arguments, disagreements would fall into play as well, because I have that seed in me already. So therefore, that anger, I'm going to carry it on to others. I'm going to show people, well, there's just no way that I'm going to forgive. So, you know, you've done something wrong. Well, too bad. That's it. You're done. And that's what happens. Right? And then forgiveness has become, well, it's kind of on your plate every day. But it was for me, thinking about it, it was on my plate every day. So if I'm angry, well, I'm thinking, well, how can I ever forgive that person or not forgive that person? Actually, I have daunting thoughts, thinking, well, what can I do possibly do to those people that hurt me? Or what can I do to myself? Can myself feel unworthy and have connection with others and all those other things that are attachments to it, not wanting to connect with other people in any aspect whatsoever, because, well, I don't have trust, so I can't trust, I can't forgive. And see what I'm saying? It leads on to a whole bunch of the things, you know, by holding on to that. Well, I don't forgive. Have I ever wanted others to forgive me for the pain that I've caused them? Well, that's an easy question. I think, obviously, for myself, I can say that, yeah, well, obviously I would want my perpetrators to feel the pain that I've carried pretty much all my life to this day. Yet, I can't really, that's just again, that's just a metaphorical thing. It would never happen, right? But yes, I honestly say I have wished my pain on others just for the fact, just so I could release it myself. But little did I realize by doing so, again, it was another form of wasted energy and not being able to, well, actually make it happen. So basically, my pain, instead of passing it on to others, for forgiving, you know, like it was nothing. It was just wasted time, right? Wasted thoughts on my part. But then again, on the other hand, that's how I coped, and that's what I thought, that's what I felt, and that's what I, how I reacted. So that was how things went at that time. Obviously now I don't react to that level anyway anymore, but nevertheless, I still have to keep myself checked that I don't. Because it's so easy, it would be so easy to fall back on, especially nowadays. These days are really, really hard. It doesn't help that we have a pandemic going on, stuck at home. There's all kinds of things, new added pressures. But
can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. So when you get in that space, what do you do to take care of yourself?
Well, you know, I'll listen to music, or I'll go outside and putt around, and I change my thought process.
So can you describe what that thought process is so that viewers can understand and relate to it from their point of view? So like when you get to a certain space, what's that energy feel like to you?
Well, when I get to a certain space, probably the very first thing I want to do is run away, right? And that's always been my course of action, pretty much from day one that I've had these experiences when I was a child and it brought me into adulthood. I predict with my experience was just to run away and do whatever and cope however I wanted to cope. These days, what I do instead of doing that, or if I think that process, obviously I probably still do, but the difference is that I don't act on that thought. So what I'll do is I find something else. When I talk, we've talked about mindfulness. Well, I guess this is my own form of mindfulness. Whether I go outside and I putter around in my backyard, or whether I listen to music, or I do something, just anything to change that thought. It's harder these days because I'm stuck at home, but nevertheless, what I've done in the past to work even today, lucky for me, I have these things to distract myself where I get to apply that so-called mindfulness. And that's what works for me. Does that answer your question? Kind of?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Next one. What has been my experience in seeking but not receiving forgiveness from some wrongdoing that I had, wrongdoing I had engaged in? That's an interesting twist right there. Well, how would it feel for somebody else not forgiving you for something you've done?
I guess I just went over that with my sister.
Yeah.
We already had a preview question.
No, but it's something that something I've done is something else.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. That's that.
Yeah.
And they can't forgive you. How does that feel?
I just explored with my sister, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because she, I guess, either she can't forgive, which is the feeling I get from her. She can't forgive me for sharing my story when I did, and you know what that did to the rest of the family and everything else. Well, that's her problem because it ain't mine. So I'm gonna take it on because it ain't mine. It's not mine to take on.
But it took some, you know, to what you're saying. So how do you come to realize that and come to that conclusion that that's how you're going to think towards that?
By processing, by writing it out. And I literally wrote a 9-page letter to my sister. And I knew instinctively that she probably would not read it anyway. So it wasn't a surprise to me when I was told by another member of the family that that's what she did. And I was all right with it because I'd already prepared myself for that reaction. It's like water off a duck's back, as we say in the UK, because that's essentially what it was, because I know her personality. I can read into, where she's at, and it's, what it'd be nice if I did have a respectful, at least just a respectful relationship with her. But at the end of the day, accept that that's probably not ever going to happen, and she will likely take that forgiveness to her grave. And you know what? Like I say, that's her stuff. It ain't mine. So, like I say, she can keep it. So,
thank you.
It's all good for me. As they say, the best vibration from that is peace, and I feel peace. So, I'm quite
happy with that.
Happy with it. Yeah. So there you go. The only person I feel for is my mum, because of the dynamics of her children. So we're so absolutely different. So yeah, she's got her other four children are very much cooperative and respectful towards each other. However, there's always one, right? So we have to accept that in large families, right? There's always a weird dynamic. So it is what it is. I accept it. We move on from that and we grow. And that's it.
Thank you. Okay, next one. If I forgive a person for harming me, does that mean that it makes sound as though if they accepted? Oh, okay. So basically, if I forgive that person that's harming me, that doesn't make sense. Oops.
How does forgiving or not forgiving, is this one?
Yeah, no, this one, here we are.
Oh,
yeah.
If I forgive a person for harming me, does that mean that it makes it sound as though it was acceptable for them to harm me?
Hmm.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So is it acceptable for someone to harm me? Absolutely not. No, that's not acceptable. That's how I view it.
Yeah.
But I can't state the opinions of anyone else, because they might see it differently. There might be a different level of journey, and that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, talking about forgiving your perpetrators, well, I've stated that I haven't, but there's people out there that have and do. And I say all the power to them. I mean, that's their choice. And if it makes them feel better for their experience, then I say go ahead and do it. There's no right or wrong here. It's about what makes you feel better. And if it means forgiving your perpetrator for what they've done or for your experience or whatever your trauma may be, then I say all the power to you. Go for it and do it, because you're the one that's stuck with that hell if you don't, right? So, by all means, it's nice to have that thought or that choice. But at the same time, you don't want to feel guilty about whatever choice you made.
If I can put it in a relative form, I guess for me, I can forgive two of my abusers, which I knew extremely well. Regarding the pedophile, now that's a totally different story, because really, when I think about that, it wasn't just me, and it went on for many, many years. So, yeah, I can forgive the energy, I can forgive that, my involvement with that time in my life. However, because it was repeat offenders, and I know that it was still going on 20 years later, that's not something that is worthy of forgiveness, in my opinion. It might be in someone else's eyes. However, I see it as when that person goes to the other side, he'll have to face whatever he has to face when he gets there. So I feel that I can forgive to the extent that I know the karma is going to come when he gets to the other side. So, hey-ho, let them deal with it, because I don't have to anymore. So that's how I view it. So I guess that's how I can put it in its box, and it's over there, and I don't need to think about it really that much anymore. I mean, I can't forget the experience, but at the same time, I'm at the level where it doesn't affect the rest of my life. So, and that's again where mindfulness comes into play, where if one of those memories comes up, I can say to myself, well, I ain't there anymore. So, yeah, I might have a thought for a few seconds or a minute or so, and then I move on with my day. And, you know, I allow my energy to be good and, you know, take a few breaths and move on, whatever I need to do. And it just doesn't last very long anymore. So that's how I guess I deal with it. I don't know.
Thank you. Okay, well, here's a last question, a segment of questions related to what we just read to you. And this is kind of a kicker here. How does forgiving / not forgiving serve me so that I can move forward in life?
Oops, I kind of went to that last question, obviously. Mm. You can share your experience with it, like. Mm.
Well, it's just the way it's worded. That's why I read it like that. So how does it serve you by not forgiving? Well, if I was to answer that question, well, I think the bigger question is, when I talk about forgiving, as we've kind of talked about it already, is, well, I think the biggest thing for me is first forgiveness towards myself. Secondary, forgiveness towards my abusers. If I can't forgive myself, then I can't have any level of forgiveness towards my abusers. But first of all, if I was to answer the question as I just asked you, how does that serve me? Well, it really doesn't serve me in any sense that I have no forgiveness towards my abusers. If I look at it this way, where I have applied forgiveness towards myself, well, then it serves me very well. Because what I mean by that is, what it's doing, how it's serving me is, well, one is, I'm not living my life precariously by those traumas every day as I was for many, many, many years. And if I was, I have control over that now, as where before I didn't. Number two, I would think that by having holding on to that non-forgiving has pushed me on the other side to moving forward to forgive myself. So I don't look at it as a gift, but in a sense it kind of is, because to me this whole thing, and a lot of it is a gift, for the things that have happened to me, but at the same time, I didn't take it as a gift in the beginning, because I was cursed with all these thoughts and emotions that made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever, led to, you know, to poor radical behavior over the years, everything from my own personal emotions to relationships with other people, to any extent. So, when I talk holding on to that, or how does it serve me? Well, initially, no, it never served me whatsoever. So it's kind of a two-parter. When I say a two-parter, yes, it doesn't serve me to hold on to my anger and thought, which I have towards my abusers, which really I don't, because it's not my daily thing now as it was. But where it does serve me is my own forgiveness and how I've battled to be where I am now, where I wasn't before. So forgiveness does serve me, but on the right side, not on the wrong side. And that's kind of how I look at it in regards to how I apply forgiveness to myself. Well, sure, those experiences happen to me, but they don't own me. They don't rule me. They don't govern my day. They try, but they don't. They're usually, you know, just through mindfulness, as we've been talking about as an example, and other processes I use, depending on how bad of a day I am, then I stay out of that spot. And I'm pretty good, because I'm probably 90% out of that most of the time. So that's pretty good, considering I was probably stuck in that spot for probably pushing 50 years. So it's just not that easy to change that thought process just because someone shows you a better way. And yes, you may deem it logical. Yes, and see that, yes, well, why am I doing this? But yet I keep doing it. Well, that's because it was a habit. It developed into a habit of many, many years of, you know, not having, you know, not feeling worthy to believe those things about myself. So, but I had to discover that. And that's the beautiful thing about my time in the house in the last 10 years. It's allowed me to do so in many funny, strange ways, I guess, whether it be to my own story or mainly probably different parts of my story over the years, and my story has changed so much now. Yes, the initial story of what happened to me, that hasn't changed, but my story of how I carry my life and what I do to better myself, that's what's changed. So it's worked out very, very well. So I need to explain that, I guess I can. I mean, obviously your experience is going to be different, and hopefully we did leave you with some seed for thought. Or that phrase, forgiveness, oh my God, it's, you know, that should be like a, I don't know, on a knight or a knight in shining armor on top of his forehead or something, I don't know. But nevertheless, that is our topic about forgiveness. I'm going to leave you with a couple of things before we end off the evening. One of the stuff we talked about, but, you know, in your journaling, if you have done any journaling for these questions that Nick and I have put out to you in these experiences, what do you see in this process? How do you see forgiveness for yourself? How does it apply to you, or doesn't apply to you? Or maybe you just, you know, you have your right to be angry for what happened to you, and rightfully so. But it's what we do with that anger after the fact that can be so harmful for ourselves. But if we're able to recognize that anger as I have, and I've gone and seeked help, then those things would change. The anger, well, like I said, you have a right to be angry, as I do, and everybody else does, and which is what we do with that anger, which is a good thing. I've been in jail many years now, which is kind of nice for stupid behavior, which is really, really good. So forgiveness, well, you can take that in any direction you want to go. I don't know what else more I can say about it. I could ask you a couple more questions, but I'm not going to do that. I can leave you. I would like to
overwhelm.
Yeah, I will leave you this quote where once I find it. Where is it? Yes. Right here. It's not a very long quote, but it was written by our founder, Gatehouse, which was Arthur Lockhart. Very, very short first sentence, rather. The very first person that benefits from thoughts of forgiveness is you. It's very, very simple. And the process of forgiveness is really simple, but saying it really is, that's for sure. Right? And I like how he said it. It's so simple. I mean, I can come back and Nicola can read all this to you all over again, and it could do absolutely nothing. But if you sit down and think about it, what forgiveness really means to you, and maybe in peace it is, it's in peace, just some of the questions we were talking about, just to see where you're at. And I can remind you, we're not here to tell you what you should do, whether you should forgive your perpetrators, or you should forgive yourself, or forgive whatever your trauma experience may be. We're here just, we want you to examine the concept of forgiveness, what it means to you. You know, we gave you some questions. You know, I hope that'll help you determine where you're at. So I hope you enjoy just a second. Next week, I'm not going to tell you what it is yet, because I'm still working out things here. As I can see, I've got everything working here tonight. I have Nick Clay here helping me to get things going. And if you saw this in front of me, what's in front of me, kind of like the thing in the last show was with Maria. It's like I'm flying a space shuttle here. All these screens and buttons and stuff. Oh, my gosh. But it's not that bad. It's actually pretty good. It works really well.
So if you didn't see the last video, Maria is the founder of the Gatehouse, for those of you that don't know. Not the founder, sorry. The executive director of the Gatehouse, sorry.
Yeah.
Arthur is the founder of the Gatehouse. Yeah. The Lockhouse. Sorry, where that wording from?
Lockhart.
Yes. Oh, that's what I said. Lockhart. Yeah. My accent.
Direct.
Jeez.
I can't help it. Some people just need to learn English.
Well, I am English, so.
Oh, sorry.
So get with it.
But then, folks, the ones that are listening, we wanted to, for the ones that are listening to Periscope or on Twitter, I need to create, that's usually my platform that I hang out on most of the time, where I advocate not only for what I'm doing for myself, but I advocate for the Gatehouse as well. But I'm requesting for people that come on and listen, whether it be now live or in the future, I'd like to create a hashtag before this, personal transformation. I mean, sure, I can go hashtag and go personal transformation, but I don't even know if that's too long. That's kind of long, and I like something a little bit more abbreviated. So I'm going to leave it for you, and obviously I'm going to think about it as well. But I'm looking for a hashtag that I can use for personal transformation or to create one. And I would appreciate any input out there. By all means, please pass it down to me. And we have a trauma conference coming up in November. November the 13th, right? It's 1 week.
I'd have to check my diary.
Anyway, I'll elaborate on more on that on there as I should have done. I know it's the week, I believe it's the second week of November. It's on for a week, and everything obviously being the way it is with the COVID shutdown.
It's all posted. We'll be posted on the Gatehouse.org website.
Yeah, both.
So we need to check the date for trauma conference. That is a week long event. They will be live, and again, it will be on the gatehouse.org website, because I honestly can't remember the date without looking at my diary.
Yeah, exactly, right here in front of me, but it will be coming up soon in November. It's to be posted, but go to the Gatehouse website, thegatehouse.org, actually, to be more precise. And Maria was telling us that a few days ago that it should be posted very soon if it's not posted already. So I would encourage you to...
November 22nd to 27th.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you, Maria. I was going to say the 23rd, but I knew it was wrong. So thank you for that. So the Gatehouse Trauma Conference is November the 22nd, which is the Monday, to the 27th, which is the Friday. So just so you know, and there will be the itinerary will be posted shortly, so just so you know, and that's www.thegatehouse.org.
Thank you, and thank you, Maria, for watching there in the background. So, folks, I think we'll leave it at that. I don't want to be too long-winded, as I as sometimes can be. I'm supposed to laugh at that. Okay.
Oh, really? But, I've heard the same joke so many times, yes. It just goes over my head now.
But folks, thank you for bearing with us. Again, we're just kind of testing this multi-level platform as we're doing. Obviously, I'm doing video now. I'm not just doing blog talk through audio now. As you can see, I have the microphone. And I'm out there, really getting out there. And I want to leave you on a good note. Thank you. And remember self-care. Take care of yourselves. And we'll be back here next Thursday, same time. I'll have a new topic, which I'll post. And again, I would appreciate any thoughts or suggestions on what personal transformation hashtag will be that I'll use for Twitter and everything else. So I would appreciate any input. You're going to say something?
Indeed. So my closing statement would be, maybe I would suggest just keep going, because around the corner is a brighter way of being. Thank you, everyone. Please enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Good night.